started. What is your name, sir?
Jerry Michael Holt.
Okay, Mr. Holt, if you can just hold just for a moment, and we will begin your hearing, and I believe that the Honorable Mr. DeNeil will be conducting your hearing at this time.
Which one is this?
Mr. Holt.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to speak up a little bit on the answer. Our volume is not real good, and your hearing isn't either, so. Okay, sir. You appear this morning before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency in reference to a parole hearing. Would you state your full name and ABC number for the record, please?
Jerry Michael Holt, 052788.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to go over some information now about the case and offerings and sentences. If we go through it, if you hear me say something that is not correct, please let me know. Every so often I'll just verify that it seemed to be correct according to your understanding of it, okay?
All right.
Okay. All right, so you're 63 years old currently, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You're serving a life sentence for molestation of a child, and you have expired a concurrent sentence of 11 years and 3 months for burglary. Both sentences began in January of 1985, and you became parole eligible on November 1st, 2017. You're certified for this hearing, which is for regular parole, home arrest, absent discharge. You started appearing before this board, or you have appeared before the board on 12 occasions previously. You were granted regular parole on November 8th, 2011, and released on June 14th, 2012. And you violated and returned to the ADC on January 3rd, 2015, and revoked on February 17th, 2015. I believe there were 3 allegations at that time. One was paying for sexual intercourse, associating with another offender, and possession of a deadly weapon. Then I see there is an affidavit in his package from the lady that was involved in that one, stating that she just made that remark to the parole officers because she was mad at you something, and that you didn't actually pay her to have sex. But so after you were revoked in February 2015 for the later parole, you were granted home arrest on June 13, 2016. And that was revoked on March 16, 2017. Your sentences were from a jury verdict, and you were sentenced on December 16, 1986. You appealed, and the convictions were upheld. And the reason that you received your life sentence was because of aggravating prior convictions in California, including 2 counts of oral copulation by force and violence, burglary, attempted rape by threats of bodily harm, and rape by threats of bodily harm, and a second burglary count. Those were all 1976. So does that sound pretty correct up to that point, sir?
Yes, it's accurate, except that after I got out in 2016, I was only out for 4 months, from October 2nd until February
For the home arrest when you were violated?
Yes.
The
arrest, yes.
Well, the only date I have was the actual date of the revocation hearing, which was in March.
Yeah.
Okay, so the offense, and on December 27, 1984, you entered an occupied residence through an unlocked back door. You then entered the bedroom of the six-year-old victim, and then found the victim's vagina area, which woke her, and she started screaming. And you fled the scene, that you were subsequently identified, arrested, tried, and convicted. You did appeal the convictions, but they were upheld. So that all sounds fairly accurate, sir?
Yeah, that's accurate. I did, I was retried on it and found guilty again.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, I'm sorry, you did have a second trial.
I don't remember the fondling or the groping. I don't remember doing that, but the victim said that I did, but I don't remember whether I did or I didn't. I honestly just don't remember it. And that's always been one of it. And I'm not trying to hide anything, I just don't remember it. And she did scream, and I did run out of there.
Okay. But the pre-sentencing report had it listed as that she had found her, and that's what woke her up and started her screaming. But regardless of exactly what happened there, the evidence was enough to have you convicted twice by a jury, so.
Yes.
You've had little discipline since you've been in, and only one in the last 5 years, which is classified as a major, but a disobeying a verbal order, and now that he refused to house, I believe, is what they said.
Yeah, they had moved me over to Geo Yard, and I knew two people over there that I didn't get along with, and I felt there would be trouble, and I tried to explain it to the staff, and they wanted me to give their names, and I wouldn't do that, because that's fraught. I gave them their nicknames, and they said because I wouldn't, and I'm not going to go out there and have trouble with someone. It's just not going to happen. And those two guys used to work in maintenance with me at South Unit, and they somehow thought I told on them for the hooch that they had blown in the back of the shop, and I didn't know that hooch was there. And it became a big brouhaha when I was in South Unit, and I wasn't going to go out on that yard with them guys at Geo. It is what's going to happen. I don't have to put up with that. I mean, it would probably got physical, my name would have been spread around as being an informant and all that, and it wouldn't have worked out well. I was willing to take the major write-up. I don't even know why they gave me a major write-up for that. You have the right to protect yourself, and they know it,
you know. A good portion of the time when you refuse to hire them, you get a disciplinary for.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've had some programming since you've been in, but it says you did complete the SOETP program in 2016?
Yes, I went through everything they had over there.
Okay. But you don't really have a release plan.
It's kind of up in the air right now. A plan after I get out is the least of my problems. I'll be able to arrange housing either at my brother's house or in one of the halfway houses. Finding work, never been a problem for me. And I got lots of bosses out there that will hire me back.
Okay.
At this point, my big problem is to get the approval by the board to get out.
Okay, well, sir, you're kind of running around in a catch-22 situation. Without a release plan, at least as one voting board member, if you don't have a release plan, I'm not going to vote to release you. And you have to, if you're going to be released, you're going to have, the Department of Corrections is going to require some location that you want to go, because they have to do an investigation, and until they can get approved housing for you, no matter if the board does vote to release you, you still stay inside until DOC gets all that, and it takes time to do it. And we've seen inmates get, they're going to release them, and 6 months later, they're still inside because they can't come up with a suitable housing that can meet all the criteria of Department of Corrections. So, you know, that isn't the least of your problems. That's one of the biggest problems as far as the release goes, just having a release plan. Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Halfway house, stay with family, and the family's here, or whatever, saying that that's where you can stay. There's a lot of significance in housing when you are released, unless you reach the end of your sentence.
It took 8 months when I was paroled in 2011. It took 8 months to arrange all the housing. And you have to understand, Mr. Deal, anything that's, any program that I do come up with, any location I go, will be approved by the parole office. It's always been like that. It took, the last time I got out, it took 4 months. Before that, it took 8 months. And it's, we're still looking, for halfway houses. I've gotten letters from them. And if not, I'll go to my brother's house and I'll submit that, and the parole office will approve it. There will be a approved location when I do leave. Everything will be approved. That's a given. You can't get out unless there is,
Okay, let me ask you a question. Why was your home arrest revoked?
Because I got caught drinking a beer.
Okay. So, with the amount of time that you have been incarcerated, why did you still have, do you have an addiction to alcohol, or just a desire?
No. It's a long story, but it basically boils down to this. I couldn't sleep. I was just, my anxiety levels were going out the window. I had lost my wallet twice. Each time it had a full cash paycheck in it. And just everything just seemed to go, thing after thing after thing went wrong for me. And I couldn't even sleep at night. I drank some beer before Christmas of 2016. I slept all night, and I said to myself, well, I won't do that again. Then everything seemed to smooth out, and toward the end of January, I lost my paycheck again, couldn't pay my rent. I had to talk to the landlord about, hey, can you wait till the next following week? And I just, I went down and got two of those cans of Miller High Life, and stood by my truck and drank so I could get some sleep. And the SOETP group at Meadows, they believed I was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. The psychological staff at Meadows believes that I was suffering from an anxiety disorder. It was pretty bad. I couldn't sleep. I was itching all over my body. And I thought, well, it must be the change of soap that I'm using for the laundry, different from the yard. And I finally called a doctor I know from urgent care Saturday morning, and I asked him about it. I was talking to him for quite a bit, and he said, well, it's probably stress. I thought, nah, it can't be stress. Come on. I go to group, and there's a guy at group in Deer Valley Counseling, and he says he's scratching so bad all over your body, scratching the blood. And he said he was doing that. His body said stress. And it started dawning on me that, yeah, I'm stress. I couldn't sleep. I was so exhausted. I didn't know what to do. They wouldn't let my girlfriend Judy move in with me. Sandra Nettles in Deer Valley County, when I told her the story of how I got put in there and how I was not culpable for the original violations back in 2015, full violations, she calls me a liar, and I'm going, Sandra, you wasn't there. I don't, that girl had heroin in her purse. I didn't know that. And I got in trouble for that. Then she's so mad when they bust her, they ask her, what's your relationship with him? He says, he pays me for sex. And I never paid her for sex. I don't need to pay her for sex. And I go to prison for something I'm not culpable for. Go back. That destroyed me. I didn't know how bad until I got back out. I'm on house arrest. Why do you deal with that? Okay. But then they won't let Judy live with me. Sandra calls me a liar. I lose my first, one of my first paychecks, I lose my wallet, I lose that. They tell me I have to quit it. The job, I got a real good job at Eagle Wings Ironcraft. You have to quit because you're going on people's property. I said, yeah, but the parole condition says inside of an occupied dwelling. And the parole supervisor says, well, if you put your foot on their front lawn, you're in violation of this rule. I said, well, that's not how it's written. It says inside of an occupied dwelling. He goes, well, we've had a lot of trouble with the board on this. And I'm thinking, well, geez, I can see why. Then I told him, well, look, I'm going to have to quit that job then because the only spot we at that company is installations. Through pool fencing and wrought iron gates and stuff like that. He goes, well, you don't know that. I go, yeah, I'm going to have to quit. He goes, you don't know that. And he got angry, so I backed off. At least he seemed like he got angry, and then I found another job. And just things like that just kept adding up. And finally, I'm not able to sleep. I'm scratching. I'm literally scratching between my fingers and stuff. I mean, I'm just... The scabs behind my knees got so bad that when I stood up, the scabs had break.
Okay, well, sir, you said that you were talking to doctors or something. Did you seek treatment for that?
No, because he said it was stress, and then what do you do with that?
Well, anxiety, stress, not sleeping at night, all that. Well, you know, if it's severe, it's considered a mental health issue, and there is treatment for it. And I know a few people that have anxiety disorders and stuff, and they don't go get drunk or even have a beer. But my question is at this point then is, so when you got out on home arrest, which was about 2 years ago, you had so much stress and anxiety in your life that you couldn't cope without drinking a beer to sleep. So if the board were to release you again, what assurance do we have that you won't get stressed again and start drinking beer again?
You know that I went 31 years without drinking. I've gone 33 years without using drugs. Okay? And know this. And you know what? I feel stupid for doing it. I'm sorry for doing it. But the dumbest thing I ever did, and I ever said, always said I would never do a dumb thing like that again. I did. My assurances are, no matter how bad it gets, I won't do that again. Remember, I went 31 years without drinking. There's hooch all over those yards. Still is. They try to stop it, they still can't stop it. And I just don't like drinking. I don't like the whole idea of it. I ran my brother out of my house one day because he'd come over to my house to drink because he's living in VA housing. They won't let him do it over there. We had a big brouhaha over that, me and my brother. If I had known Ashley Martin had that heroin in her purse, I'd have run her out of there so quick because I just don't mess with that stuff. But trying to get that exhausted and being a structural welder and having to go to work every day and concentrate on your work, man, it was kicking my ass. And you know what? I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just not an alcoholic. I don't desire it. I don't care for it. And before Christmas when I drank and got that good night's sleep, I said, well, I'll never do that again, and I meant it. and then I lost that wallet again. Full cash paycheck. My God, it hit me. When I searched the whole house, my pickup truck, and I can't find that wallet. And when I realized it was gone, I almost just collapsed to the floor. I'm just saying, what is this crap going to end?
Well, sir.
I go to Deer Valley Counseling, and I talk to Sandra Nettles, and I go, Sandra, man, I'm having a hard time. And she goes, what? That's life. And I go, I know, Sandra, but I'm having a hard time. She goes, well, that's life. And I realize there's no help here, you know? So that was right then when I went, and I got a couple more of the Miller High Lifes, and I drank them. I'm standing out by my truck. And I was perfectly relaxed. I finished both of them. I was perfectly relaxed.
And okay, sir.
Sir,
you made the statement that you're not an alcoholic.
No, sir.
So were you an alcoholic 33 years ago when you stopped drinking?
I don't think I was. I liked drinking, and I was a social drinker. I never drink by myself. I always drink with other people. I drive over to San Diego, and I never drink. You know, I buy a beer, and I wouldn't finish it. I mean, I just, you know.
Well, why did you stop drinking?
Because, and I've said this many times, I didn't want to be that person anymore. I was a loudmouth buffoon when I drank, and I just didn't want to go there anymore. I wanted to be separate from that. Same way, one of the reasons I quit drugs is the same reason. I gotta tell you guys a story. I was in the central unit, and there was a guy talking to another guy, and I'm kind of involved in their conversation. He's talking about robbing a liquor store in North Phoenix. And he gets the money and everything, and he's got a gun on this guy, gets the money, and then he pistol whips him with a gun. And I'm thinking, well, why didn't you? And it kind of appalled me. Why'd you get him with a gun? Did he need to do that? And I always look back to that and think that I was changing. I was just becoming a different person, a completely different person. I don't want to be who I was. What a stupid.
Okay, well, where I was going with that, Alcoholics Anonymous, with what you just said, Alcoholics Anonymous would say not only were you an alcoholic then, but once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, and you have to always pay attention to it. That's why when somebody goes to AA and starts a 12-step program, it's not just 12 steps, it's continual for the rest of their lives. And they sponsor people, they get sponsored, they do all that stuff. And but the important thing is the first thing is admission. And when, you know, if a person can admit that they've got a problem, then they can start seeking help. But until they're willing to admit they have a problem, they're not gonna even put an effort into getting that help. Well, if you have severe anxiety problems outside, and that's understandable, but you know, you're in a very, very, very controlled situation for a long period of time. For a good deal of your life, and then all of a sudden there's no walls to really keep you in. It can be a hard transition, but there are quite a number of inmates go out there and go through the same thing and succeed. But the big point is they seek help when they need it. And it seems to me that, you know, that okay, your counselor wasn't giving you much help, and you know, and you understood that. But you didn't go any further. You talked to a doctor that you said you needed, and he said it's stress and everything. But there's a lot of things you can do when you got that much anxiety and you're getting, you know, scratching to the point of bleeding and everything. You need to get further help. And it's just hard as one board member to get much reassurance out of the way you say you handle the anxiety and everything, which is, like I say, a natural thing when you've been incarcerated as long as you have. I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time, and if you do have a supporter here, that we have an opportunity to speak if they so desire, okay? Okay, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Abb, I was just kind of looking over your case supervision summary back in 2013 when you have been revoked. It was, talks about you missing a felony way, but the young lady who allegedly said that she had sex with you, she had heroin in her purse while she was in your house?
Yes, she did.
Okay, and you were also revoked because of that reason. That's one of the reasons for hanging out with someone who had a criminal record, and she also had a criminal record for prostitution?
I was unaware of all of that at the time. I found out later when I seen the parole office reports. I knew that she had been free of drugs for like 3 years. And that's one of the reasons I hung out with her, because we were like kindred spirits, you know. I would have never believed that she would start using again. And come to find out by people that knew her, she had just started using again. And I wish she wouldn't have come around my house. I'd have run her out of there. I mean, I believed her. I mean, you know, look at, in prison, you're around a lot of people that have reformed themselves and you know, and that's the kind of people I like. I like people that's dealt with their issues. And she's a nice person. Just likes that heroin, I guess.
Okay, so she said that she periodically came over there and stayed. When they got there, they found a sleeping bag and another bag with some female's clothing. Like, she just came over there and stayed periodically?
No, she had her apartment across the street. That was Judy Von Raves. That was another friend of mine's stuff. She kept it there now and again.
So where was the party that you met this lady at?
There was no party. I didn't meet her at a party. See, that I don't know how that got in there. I met her at a yard sale across Van Buren from my apartment building one afternoon. I bought some Tupperware stuff at the yard sale, and she was sitting there, and we got to talking, and that's how I met her. There was no party.
And so you say that you did drink a beer. You drank one beer. Is that what you said?
I drank two beers.
So did you know that was a violation of your parole to drink the beer?
Yes, I did.
So why would you drink the beers knowing that you had this parole and the situation that you were in, that you had been the release? I mean, at that time, you were well aware of what the conditions of your parole was.
Yes.
So why would you, just explain to me, why would you risk that if you were back out? What would prevent you from doing that again?
You know that along with not being able to sleep and all the anxiety and the isolation that I was living under, you got to cop an attitude too. I copped an attitude to a point I just couldn't sleep anymore. I'd lay in bed three quarters of the night, just my mind going a million miles an hour. And by God, beer worked. I don't advocate that, but I copped an attitude. And I'm not against the parole rules or anything that I'm under. I just didn't know where to turn. And had I gone to the parole, told my parole officer, hey, I'm going to think I'm drinking a beer, or should he judge whether to put me back in prison, or that's his only answer, you know. Sandra Nettles, I went to her, you know, telling her, trying to explain to her, man, I'm having some troubles here. She just blew me off.
Okay, so let me just...
I had trouble. Check it out. I went all those years without drugs and alcohol, and I went through the stress and anxiety of being out that 4 months. I literally had to go back to prison to figure out what was wrong with me. And I did. And I learned how to relax. The SOETP group with their post-traumatic stress disorder program, I went through that, studied it up, learned how to relax at night, go to sleep. And I realized that I have a lot of good points, you know, and I'm just going to focus on them. I'm not going to mess up again. This is not my way. It's not my way to mess up in the first place. I'm not, you check it out. There was no crimes committed, no burglary, no theft, no robbery. There was no acts of violence. There was no illegal drug use, although it was against protocols to drink, no illegal drug use. And the biggie, there was no sexual deviance involved here. I drank two beers to go to sleep at night. And as soon as the parole was pulled up on me, I admitted it to him. I told him, yeah, I drank these beers, and I drank some before Christmas. And you know what? I don't even believe in drinking anymore. I don't care about that stuff. And here I sit. Boy, howdy. I'm not, and you know what? I'm not against you guys on the board. I'd like to work with you instead of against you. Then you push a guy into it. You know, it was so bad that I'd go to the grocery store and buy groceries, and I'd get back in the house, and I would forget that they were in the truck. One day I went back, and I left them in the truck all night. Other times I would put stuff in the microwave, and I would forget that I had it in there. And see, my mother, she was really forgetful all the time. Us kids make fun of her. You know, we loved her. We'd make fun of Mom. But as she got older, she was suffering from dementia and forgetting stuff. And I was thinking that maybe that's happening to me. You know, and that was part of the anxiety. I'm thinking, man, I can't do this. I mean, I'm making simple mistakes like that.
Okay.
I locked my keys in my truck three times.
Okay, Mr. R. Mr. R. Mr. R. So let me just go over a couple of things with you. Okay. In November of 2011, you were granted regular parole. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And you stayed on regular parole for a while, and then in 2014, October, November 2014, you applied for absolute discharge, and you were denied. And then your parole was revoked in 2015. February of 2015, your parole was revoked. So you went back to prison then, you know, during that period of time. And then you again was granted home arrest on June of 16. You was granted home arrest in 16. And then in March of 17, you had a home arrest revocation and you were revoked again. So that means you've been out twice, right?
That is correct.
So that you understand the importance of following the directions and what the parole officer tells you to do. Is that correct?
I do understand that.
Okay. Well, let me just finish, sir. I'm going to let you.
Okay.
And so your crimes that basically that you committed did not involve drugs. It was all sexual, basically sexual crimes that you are child molestation, burglary charges or so that you were charged with. Is that correct, mainly?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Alright, I'm just trying to, so tell me, sir, that you went out twice and you had these violations, and I understand that you're making excuses, and I hear what you're saying about your reason for getting violated, but what's going to prevent you from getting out and doing that again, sir? That's what I'm trying to understand. What has changed?
You mean committing sex offenses?
No, violating your home arrest or your parole violation.
I don't want to violate, and I'm not going to. And the only thing, you know, I really have is my word. I give my word to the board that I will not violate again. And, I don't want to come back. I'm too old. I'm 63 years old. I still got a couple of years to go before I get my 40 quarters in to get Social Security.
Uh-huh.
You know, I got to work. And, that's a huge thing. You know what? I was suffering real bad. I was suffering, and I've learned to deal with all that. I don't care how intense things get. I will not violate again. And one other thing, too, I'm not going back to Deer Valley Counseling. I'm going over there to Arizona Center for Change. I've looked into their program. It's real good over there. And I mean, you know, when someone, you pay a fee to someone every week for taking care of you psychologically, and then she blows you off. And I knew she was going to do that. I kind of figured she was going to do that, but I was desperate. I needed help. And I literally had to come back to the yard to get it. You know? Yes. I'm a pretty strong person. I mean, look at the 31 years I didn't drink. Look at the 32 years I didn't use drugs. You know, I was out for 3 years working for Allied Machine Works. I have a perfect record with those guys. I have a good parole rate. 3 years. No drugs, no alcohol, no kind of crimes.
Okay.
For all my business.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Al.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Hamm. So Mr. Alt, you said a couple of times that at Deer Valley Counseling that Sandra Nettles blew you off and that you needed help and she wasn't giving. What kind of help were you expecting or were you wanting to get from her?
I don't know. What do they give in a situation like that? I did need to talk. I needed to tell her. I needed to tell somebody that, man, I'm going nuts here. I'm having trouble sleeping. The anxiety's killing me. And everything that was going on with me. And did you know that all of my symptoms paralleled post-traumatic stress disorder? And maybe she would have told me that then. And you know what? The counselor, the psychological staff member at Meadows told me, he says, well, you should have offered to pay her hourly. I said, well, yeah, I would have paid her hourly. I needed to talk to somebody. I mean, I'm surprised for help. And
okay.
Whatever it was, you know, I mean, hey, look at what I'm going through. Please help. And it just kind of blew me off. You know?
Okay, so thank you.
I'm going to different people if I ever get a chance.
Thank you, Mr. Nam.
Thank you, Mr. Nam. Mr. Canales?
Dr. Wright?
Mr. Alt, you keep saying that you need help, but you indicated, I believe, if I heard you correct, that you've taken all of the programs that relates to SOETP. None of those programs, you didn't receive any help at all from those programs, sure, in terms of identifying your triggers and so forth. You keep saying you need help, but you've gone through some programs that offer, that should have provided some help, and I think you said you were satisfied with that sexual program, so that didn't help you at all, sir?
Yeah, but when you're overwhelmed, you're overwhelmed. I never expected to be overwhelmed like I was. I never expected that. And know this, I got rid of sexual deviance. I got rid of that stuff and threw it away. And no matter how bad it got out there, I drew a line on the ground a long time ago. And no matter how bad it gets, I'll never cross that line to harm anyone ever, even in the smallest kind of way. And that's who I am. Yeah, I got that out there for me. I was suffering. The anxiety was killing me. But I would have never harmed anyone. And that's who I am. And as it stands now, shoot, I've taken my level of being able to deal with even harder stuff even to another point. But, a lot of people violate. And I was honest about, look, I was having a lot of troubles here. And I had to go back and talk with Amanda Atkins and the staff at Meadows and tell them what was going on with me. And they helped out. They've always helped out.
Why didn't you, sir, forgive me for interrupting, sir. You were saying that they helped you, the people at Meadows helped you and all of that. Why didn't you apply some of that to some of your thinking so that you would not have violated again, sir?
I tried. I did the best I could. And evidently there was still some deficits there, you know, because I just...
Let me just ask this for time management purposes. This would be my final question. How can you assure this board that you won't make the same mistakes again, sir? That concerns me. You've gone through all these programs. You understand what your challenges are. You understand what your triggers are. So, but how can you assure us if you would, this board release you again, that we won't end up 4 months, 4 years, at some point in the future, you won't be back again, sir?
Dr. Wright, how does someone assure the board of that? I can only give you my word. And I want the board I want to please the board. I want the board to look at me in 4 or 5 years ago. Wow, you've done real good. And that means a lot to me. And I had to go through this again because there was still something that I wasn't dealing with, and that was the high anxiety levels. And this is a broad side. I didn't know what really to do. It hit me hard. Try going all working on yourself all those years, getting out because the board believes in you. And then go back behind that woman had drugs in her purse.
But time management purposes, I'm not going to say anything else, but I think that instead of you, this is just me as an individual, instead of you attempting to please this board, you need to be pleasing yourself, sir, so that you won't make those same mistakes over and over again, sir. Just something for you to think about, sir.
I am.
Okay.
Look, you know what, I look up to those people who have authority over me. I look up to my bosses. I look up to everybody like that. And if those people were satisfied with me, I'm satisfied too. Check it out. Like I said, I don't want to come back. I'm tired of this. I'm 63 years old. I want to work. I want to earn a living. And you know another thing that bugs me is other people are supporting me. The taxpayer support, they don't need to support
me. Okay, sir. Okay, we need to be paying attention to time management on this. I do have one question for you. What's the traumatic circumstance in your life that would have caused PTSD?
Going back to prison.
Okay.
They just
stumbled me. Okay. I believe we have a supporter today, Michelle. Do you wish to make any statements today? Tell the board anything?
If I can help?
Okay, well, if you would like the rest of the board to step up to the podium. And state your name and tell us what you'd like us to hear.
My name's Michelle Lynn Lively. I'm his niece, his sister, my mom, Lorraine. One thing he never did say was how neglectful my grandma was when they were growing up. My mom had me when she was 16. So not only did they grow up in a neglectful home, then when they had me, there was less food because nobody ate so my mom could feed me and diaper me. So he did grow up in a neglectful home. When it comes to support, had he asked me that he wasn't sleeping, counseling has changed since 1986. 1986, there were no treatments. You went, you didn't feel good, you dealt with it. You know, I could have helped him. He never brought it up that he wasn't sleeping. I would have directed him to go to a counselor he liked and that he connected with and told him, hey, you need to keep trying a different counselor. He didn't bring it up to me, I would have told him that. I would have also told him to take Benadryl. Benadryl helps you sleep and it would have controlled the itching. You know, but he never brought that up to me. I live in Yuma, so I'm a few hours away, so does my mom. But if he picks up the phone, I will be there. I will be the moral support he needs. My little brother is here, my uncle is here. They couldn't get off work to come. So he does have support in this town for him. I can't guarantee anybody won't break the law again. But I can guarantee that we will be more active support. His sister, one of them, has already died. My mom, she couldn't stand up here. She's got COPD and pulmonary hypertension. So she couldn't stand here to talk to you. So she's like, I just can't do it. But she may be dying in the next couple years too. And I would like him to have a relationship. I have 6 kids that he's never met. 4 of them are now adults. So he may meet them. I've got 2 grandkids he will never meet until they're adults because he's not allowed to be around children. But someday I would like to introduce them to my children. I mean, I haven't seen him. I talked to him on the phone, because I didn't see him when he got out, since I was 16 years old. I'm 48. You know, I understand child molestation. I was a victim, not by a family member. So I do protect my children. I would protect them from that. But I don't see any reason that, you know, he does have moral support here. I would be his support system. My mom, while she's with me, will be his support system. And I can't guarantee, you know, anything else for you guys, but he does have support here. He does have a job waiting. He is a very good welder. And we'll have to understand the laws, because I don't understand, you know, I remember the first time he got out, you know, how do you, because he's not allowed to be around children, but how do you go to the grocery store when there's always children? Those are laws that I need to understand, to help him understand. So there's some things that I will have to learn how to understand so I can help him not violate. But he will have support. So when he comes under the anxiety, it will be able to coach him down. I will be able to talk to him. You know, I'm not a criminal. You know, I'm somebody with a good job and a lot of kids. So I don't know if you all have any questions on what we could do as family for him if you let him out.
Thank you, ma'am.
I've never done this, so I didn't know what I was supposed to do.
Well, that's fine. That's perfect.
You did great.
Thank you.
Okay. And there's no other support in the room for Mr. Alt.
My
no, I mean,
yeah.
And is there anybody here for victims and victims' advocates? Prosecution? No? Okay, sir. Mr. Alt, you're nearing the end of your hearing. The board will go into discussion shortly to make a determination. But before we go into discussion, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Anything else you'd like to tell the board, we just ask that you don't repeat all the information we've already covered. But now is the time. If there's anything else you'd like to tell us.
Gee, I wish I had more words. I will never do anything to violate the rule again. And if it takes isolating myself from all these people, which I've already done, if it takes going to counseling that will help me, yes, I will do that. And I want to continue the life I was living, the non-drug, the non-alcohol life I was living. And I want to live conventionally. I want to earn a living. I want to work. And I don't want to ever cross that line to where I do something that harms another person. I just not going to do it. That's who I am. What else can I say?
Thank you, sir. Before we go into the discussion to make a determination, we'll be talking amongst ourselves. You may think we're talking to you, but we won't be, so we ask that you remain silent, but stay on the phone. Once we make a determination, I'll be back with you. Okay, sir?
Yes.
And what was now discussion? This one is an unfortunate case. Prior record, all of the priors that were alleged for this sentencing were one group of charges in California. Other than that, there's not a lot of criminal history involved, but those charges in 1976 add up to a lot. And then on to the current offense and the aggravation there. Mr. Alt has been released twice. And although there was an affidavit to the effect that the woman involved in the parole violation didn't actually receive any money for sex, she just said it because she was mad. Still doesn't alleviate the other two allegations. And that's, you know, with being in company of some other offender, and more egregiously carrying a deadly weapon, the possession of a deadly weapon. They go back and they get on home arrest, and rather than trying to seek the proper assistance, he's ordered to outlaw, which He said he didn't want to use them anymore because he was done with that lifestyle and then he was going back to it. And then I come to today's hearing and I have some reservations about Mr. Ault's attitude about housing and release plans and those aren't the issue and how we get approved and everything else. It's taken a lot for granted. And I don't feel comfortable with everything involved for town because I just don't feel comfortable with the idea of any kind of release this time. But I want to listen to discussion from me and my fellow board members.
Is it written out?
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I'm kind of actually on the fence. And the way some things that I see that are working in his favor is there are some very nice letters in this packet from his neighbors talking about him and there's one, I believe it's a veteran, and said he comes over and offers to help him. It's an older person. Evidently lives wherever he was living. And the neighbors are, or the letters are very sincere. And so I see that as a positive thing. He was being a good citizen. He has a potential for a good job. His niece said he's a good welder and that he can earn a nice living with that. He did complete the sex offender treatment program. And really throughout this hearing, I'm not hearing that he would be at a risk to reoffend in that way. I'm just not hearing it. And I do appreciate very much his family support. I appreciate his niece's words and that. On the other side, he's been out two times and he's violated both times with explanation, you know, of why. But I'm just on the fence. I'm not opposed to a release, but I'm just not totally convinced either. So, you know, got the pros and the cons. So I'm just not. I would just appreciate hearing more input from fellow board members, I guess.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
I agree. He has done, and he does really have some good letters in his file, and that he's done some good things with helping the neighbors and taking people to the store and being there. But I'm concerned, you know, his crimes are of a sexual nature, that he did have this female inside of his apartment who did have harem in her purse, who does have a history of prostitution and been arrested for prostitution. Matter of fact, she had just recently got out of jail when she came to his house, and she said that, although there's a statement that it wasn't true, that she came to his house to have sex with him once or twice a week and he would pay her $30. That could be, you know, reasonable there, but I tell you what concerns me, as well as him having the opportunity to be out on two separate times, is that in all the letters that's in there and all the comments that's in there, there's no one in there that mentions that he was having any type of problem sleeping, that he was under any stress. They all talk about how good he was and how, you know, was. There was no indication that he was having any problems in there. And I just feel like Mr. Ault is blaming all the things on someone else instead of taking the responsibility for himself. I think if he took the responsibilities for himself, that he would. If, you know, he didn't know the girl had drugs on her. He didn't know that he had a problem with the counselor. Everything is somebody else's fault. There are indications that he hadn't drunk for years. If you hadn't been drinking for a number of years and nobody's ever seen him drinking, that, you know, why would he all of a sudden just start drinking beer? But according to the reports on his verification, you know, he had several missed UAs. His PO had done everything to work with him. So I'm just not, you know, understanding that he would not know why this female would be inside of his apartment, and that he said he met her at a swap meet, at a thing, but the report says that both of them say they met at a party. And he's saying that he doesn't know how that got into the report that they met at a party, because he met her at a yard sale, I believe he said, across the street at a yard sale. It's just not matching up. His story is what he's explaining happened, and the fact that this female was there, that she did have drugs in a purse, and that, you know, what was the reason that he had her there. It's just not matching up to me. So I'm not in favor of seeing him being released out, and I think he's just not taking the responsibilities for his own actions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Canales?
Dr. Ray?
I do agree with what I believe I heard you and Mr. Johnson stated. I think that he's just not taking responsibility. I think that if he were taking responsibility, he's been out twice already. I'm just not. And if you really go back and reflect on what was said last year about that lady who was a yard sale or whatever, it just didn't match. I think that's one reason this board didn't let him out last year. I'm just not in favor, sir. I'm just going to leave it at that, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Okay, so based on all the information presented today in our discussion, I'm going to make a motion at this time, and the motion is going to be to deny Reverend Home Rush for absolute discharge to Mr. Gary and Art, PC number 052788, and the crime on master alarm setup. I need a motion.
Second.
Agree.
Agree.
Motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Canales, agreed by Dr. Wright, Mr. Johnson, and Ms. Rittenhouse. Okay, sir, the board is going to revoke your, or not revoke, but has voted to deny you the ready for unless rapid discharge at this time. And the reasons listed will be serious and violent offense, serious and deviant offense, aid to the victim, prior criminal history, repeat offender, good program, I can say that. Full release plan. And unless there's something that my fellow board members would like added. Okay. Right, so you know the reading, sir?
Yeah, you know, next year when I come back up.
Okay, sir.
All right, sir,
the discussion is over. And you'll be certified in approximately 1 year to return in front of the board, and at that time we can have a new discussion. Okay? So we wish you the best of luck. This will end your hearing, and would you please put the CO3.com on the phone?